Hello and welcome to another Connecting Consciousness. Today is the 7th of September and this should go out onto YouTube tomorrow or Sunday, depending on when we can get it going, probably on the Sunday. Today is my birthday and nevertheless I'm still doing the podcast because it's important and I perhaps didn't have anything better to do. So as you can see, the cat is ready, willing and able, and the kittens will be charging around. Do have a rather sick kitten at the moment. It's on a particularly strong drug and we're hoping that he'll be fine. So let's see how we can go today. So first of all, I want to do the usual update and draw your attention to the situation carrying on from the last one we did about America, how important I felt it was to do a special program on it, really, because it was so monumental. And basically what happened at the end of that was at an interview, the President of the United States said, look, if anybody tries to impeach me, then there'll be a revolution in this country. And as I put on the website, that was coded message for basically the military would declare martial law if anybody in the deep state, as it's sometimes known, tries to remove the president. Now, interestingly enough, that didn't fall on deaf ears, I suppose, for the majority of the unawake public. They just didn't see that, they just took it at face value. But for those who the message was aimed at, they clearly understood it. And the calls for impeachment have died to death. And we've got a situation now in America where we call it sort of like the Five Eyes, where Britain, Canada, Australia, New Zealand work together to share information, and it has been seen as the inner circle, sort of a sacred group that, you know, always would never turn on each other. GCHQ, the British Eavesdropping Intelligence Reception and Transmission Center, has always been basically run by the Americans. So what's very interesting is that that has been cut from the American control. In other words, GCHQ is now no longer reporting in the same way to the United States as it has done, and that's quite interesting. I've been asked by a couple of people regarding what's happening in space with some of the satellites that are reported to have been deactivated, or some even saying shot down. And the main feeling is these are communication satellites that run a specific network which is not part of the general North American defense network. It's not part of the White House. It's a standalone secret group of satellites that certain individuals not just can make telephone calls but can receive spy information that's not actually even going to its own government. Now, I have heard something along these lines, but what I also wanted to say was some of the satellites that have been taken out of operation are what we call the Black Knight satellites or the Dark Knight satellites. These are not just communication satellites, but they're satellites that can activate individual people on the ground. So if you have a satellite that's circling the Earth, it's not just taking photographs, but it has the ability to, when it's over the target area, to send a frequency down that that individual is pre-programmed to receive, and it can activate them. And that really is part of the deep state. So that I understand, that network of Dark Knight or Black Knight satellites has been deactivated. It's highly possible that some of the cabals, secret satellites for gathering information and communicating have also been impacted. So that's important. And this is what's causing all of this huge to-ing and fro-ing. They want to impeach the president, and then the president fights back. Now, what I thought was really exciting was that you may remember that seems months ago now, had said that one of the Supreme Judges was going to retire before there was any announcement, and indeed he did. And President Trump has chosen Judge Kavanaugh as his nominee, and Judge Kavanaugh is doing his 2 days or so interview by the Senate, and it's hours. There's hours of it on YouTube. There really is, and I've been told to look at a certain aspect of it, and I've put that on the Connecting Consciousness website. I put it on my website with some times of the clock, and I want to give you those so you can go to the website after you've seen this and just watch that. It's crucial because Judge Kavanaugh is interviewed by both Democrat and Republican senators, pro and anti him, and at the one point he's interviewed by a Republican senator, and at the end of his 30 minutes or what have you, each senator gets a set amount of time, he makes a very interesting question, and he basically says to the judge, you're aware of certain laws that an American citizen is protected by the Constitution, a certain amendment. Judge Kavanaugh says, yes, of course. And he's saying, look, you know, if an American citizen abroad is protected against their own country, so an American citizen abroad is protected against his or her American government in terms of they can use the Constitution even though they're not on American soil, but clearly not protected against the foreign country they're in. So that was all understood. And then the senator basically says, and takes it right off track, and he says, but what about when the person fights against their own country? Their own country, America. How does that work? Now, this is coded information. It's aimed at the cabal, basically saying, we're going to get you, and we're going to use the military, because he's talking about special courts. So if you go to my website, I've just written down the points here. It's the second day of Judge Kavanaugh's talk. And if you go to 3 hours, 2 minutes, and 30 seconds, and run it from there, you don't have to listen for very long, it's just a few minutes, but 3 hours, 2 minutes, and 30 seconds. And then keep it going, and then at 3 hours, 4 minutes exactly, is the very interesting part. And that goes to 3 hours, 4 minutes, and 15 seconds. So there's 15 seconds of this really crucial bit. And then it ends at 3 minutes, I beg your pardon, 3 hours, 4 minutes, and 53 seconds. So if you run it from 3 hours, 2 minutes, and 30 through, but watch out for that particular bit where the senator is asking Judge Kavanaugh that if an individual, an American citizen, turns against the American government, what would happen? Now, the only reason for that is literally to say to people, those of you who are on an indicted list, you will face a military court. So what we've got is we've got both halves. We've got the Trump supporters, and we've got what some people call the deep state or the cabal, both playing poker here. So one side wants to impeach the president, and the president fights back, and the code words are becoming less and less covered. They're becoming more and more open. So it's becoming an incredibly interesting game. Now, once Judge Kavanaugh is put into post, then that is, and I always said it was sort of August, September, possibly October, that we would begin to see certain things happening. Now, I talked a little bit about the situation with GCHQ and some of the communication systems. That has got nothing to do with Kavanaugh in the sense that this is another, if I can use the word, battle taking place on a communications front. But it is all part of the same game going on. So we are very American-centric at the moment, but that, if those of you who've listened to me for a little while will know, I've always said that Great Britain was the magical isle. Great Britain was where the energies would fight for the hearts and minds, but America was where the action would be. America is the do or die. It's the gun-holding country. It's where the two countries, Great Britain and America, they work together in many ways, energetically. I don't mean politically, but you know, they balance each other, and what happens in one has a very interesting effect on another. So that's my update. We're going to do a slight change with the questions. A couple of people have said, how about some of the new questions? So what we're going to do today is we're going to have some of the more recent questions, but don't worry, no one's going to drop off the end of the boat. We will go back and pick the other questions up. So over to Rebecca. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi there. Hello.
Hi.
Okay, and happy birthday.
Yes, thank you. Don't feel too bad.
Okay, this question, which is the very latest to come in, and it came in today, is from Jacqueline, who says, "Hi, Simon. I enjoy going back through your older videos from time to time for a refresher on the information you've given. I was noticing that a lot of your older interviews and CC shows are unavailable, both on your website and YouTube. Do you know if they will be made available again in the future? I certainly hope so. And why are they removed?"
Right. When a person does a presentation, if it's done through a third party, that party holds the copyright. One of the major reasons that Rebecca and I are doing what we're doing now is because, you know, I hold the copyright. So when you go through somebody else, they have the right to pull the videos or do whatever they want with them because it went through those. Although I have the intellectual copyright on what I'm saying, in terms of the way it works on this third dimensional planet, when you publish a book or a film or a television show or what have you, it is the person who puts it out that has that overall copyright. So all I can say is that I have no control over anything that was done prior to me doing this with Rebecca. But if you trawl around, you will find other groups of sites putting out my material. If there's a particular aspect that you're interested in, then please write in. And we can address that, or I can address that, by, you know, as part of the particular podcast, I can actually talk about an aspect. One of the things with Andy Bale, who does the web hosting, the webmaster for me, one of the ideas that he's had, and other people have had as well, is that we could create a almost like a book, but I don't mean an old-fashioned book, but we could have something so that if you typed in a particular topic, then it would take you to the video, or not just the video, but it would take you to that part. Or we could do a traditional book, and it would then be in headings or topics. So rather than, you know, wade through five or six chapters to try to find something interesting, you would say, well, chapter two is on this and chapter three is obviously on that. So we were looking at ways of trying to bring the right information quickly to the individual. So these are things that I'm very excited about, and we're working towards that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And also, we've got in mind to do one on just a certain topics like the pyramids, or other topics that people would choose. And Jacqueline goes on to say that she would love to have a video library of all your shows and interviews and presentations, as she values your information so much. Thanks for everything, Jackie, New Mexico.
Well, that's really kind of you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay.
What I would say is that we did put a call out a little while back for interesting topics, and we did get those in, and we haven't forgotten those. Pyramids came up quite highly. There's still time if you have a particular interesting topic, do that. And what we'll do, we'll run a special. So I don't want to lose the answering of the question, so we'd have to run an extra one like we did for the situation in the US. So if, say, for instance, I don't know, pyramids came up on top, and then we would just run a special one on that. So yeah, that's what we're working towards, something to try to be more responsive to the audience.
Okay, thanks. Susan from Stockholm says, "I listened to the supposed interview held with extraterrestrial L, spelt A-I-R-L, so it's Ariel.
Ariel.
A-I-R-L. From Roswell crash done in 1947 by Matilda O'Donnell.
Who was a nurse.
McElroy. You talk of the Earth as a prison, as a sole prison planet, as a sole prison place, as well as Errol. Do you share the ET's picture of the old empire and the domain? As the ET puts it, there's no other purpose of the soul's clean slating in between lives other than to keep us prisoned. Does that make karma just a myth? And if not, can we escape this prison as spirits? And how can other entities and spirits visit the Earth without getting trapped? Much love, Susan from Stockholm.
Thank you, Susan.
lots of questions in there.
I'll just give an overview, I think, to be fair to everyone else. I think that book was written for and on behalf of, or by, the woman who was a nurse at the time, and is one of the one of the true renditions of what happened, because it's very fashionable to say all the crew of the two craft that crashed were dead. That's not accurate. At least one survived, and those again of you who've taken the trouble, thank you, to listen to me over the time, have known that I've banged on about women drivers, and I mean driving of spacecraft, that females make the best space pilots. I don't mean in the third dimensional world, not these tin cans that go around the Earth, real spacecraft. And you notice that, or you may not realise that I pronounce the name Ariel. That's how I would call her. This grey entity was with a soul, because she was the pilot of the craft that crashed. The rest of her crew, who were male, were what people call drones. They had no soul in their body, but Ariel had a soul. And although Susan excuse me, didn't mention it, when they're about to electrocute Ariel, this is the American military, she jumps out of her body and escapes the net around the Earth. She's able to break through that barrier and get through. And I never fully understood what gave her the capability to do that, but she did. She refers to a place as the domain, and in terms of an empire. And what is interesting is that, and it's not really been reported by many others, that Ariel, and I'm having to really dig deep for all this info, but Ariel was talking about the planet of Earth being a commercial concern, and I don't mean gold and silver. And in other words, it was bio-formed. All of the things on the planet were brought here from other places, but for gain, not financial gain. I keep having to reinforce that. So a good example of this is plants breathing carbon dioxide and breathe out oxygen. So we breathe in oxygen and we breathe out carbon dioxide, and they don't care what the scientists say. That is as almost someone sat down and said, well, in order to keep both groups together, they've got to, it's like an engine that never runs out of power, you know, a self-recharging battery. So the plants keep humans going and the humans keep the plants going. Insects pollinating plants. And what Ariel she wasn't suggesting it, she was absolutely 100%, was that all of these things had been brought to the Earth, the whole Earth had been terraformed, and all of this was done by like a corporation, but we would call it the domain. And we shouldn't see Charles Darwin's natural selection as the answer, that we should look beyond that to a hidden hand that created this. So for me, that was the most interesting aspect. But I can't let the topic go without just reminding people And Rebecca, you can help me here, please, because those of you who have been listening to me for a very long time know that, if not the first, I was one of the first to absolutely refute that the two space, first of all, wasn't one spacecraft crashed in Roswell, there was two. Many people don't accept that, but nevertheless, the big key was that I said this was a deliberate crashing, and there's, the majority of people think that either it was brought down by the United States Air Force, but it wasn't the United States Air Force back then, it was the Army Air Corps, but nevertheless, it was either brought down by the Air Force or it was a thunderstorm, a lightning storm. And I've always maintained that it was a deliberate crash, because it is fundamentally not allowed for an advanced technological race to cede or gift or trade technology to a more primitive race. It's just not allowed. You just can't do it. It's just fundamentally not allowed. So the way they did it was to engineer an accident so that the technologies were crashed onto the Earth. And humans that do have, we do have a connection to apes. There is a huge genetic link. So Charles Darwin isn't completely mad. There is a strong connection to the ape creatures. And ape creatures are fantastic. If you give a chimpanzee a Rubik's Cube, at some point it will actually get all the colours right. And it doesn't give up. It's really curious. They say that curiosity in the cat, but primates are really curious. So this alien group, which was actually reptilian, using the greys as the intermediary part of the domain, seeded technology on the Earth, fully confident that the humans would back engineer it. Now, am I right in saying that in Peter Padgett's latest book, Rebecca, mm-hmm. he actually said exactly the same thing as I did?
Yeah, he did. He really did, and it was very interesting to read. His book, Secret Life of a Spook, he wrote that the Roswell crash was deliberate by the aliens. He didn't specify which group, but he indicated that it was a higher intelligent life, and that the majority of the beings that died, or the ones that died, were the greys that were more robotic. So they weren't single-souled creatures, but the one that survived was a souled
fantastic
creature.
Well, sorry to interrupt you. Do you know when that book was written?
I actually don't.
Is it because he's written two that I know?
He's written quite a few books.
Okay, is this the latest one or is it an older one?
I don't think it's the latest one. Right. I think it's been out a couple of years, but I can't be sure, I'm afraid, because I'm just working
okay.
my way through
well,
different books.
I know Peter, and Peter mm-hmm. is a very genuine guy, mm-hmm. and he's obviously obtained that information probably from a different source, or partly the same source, who knows, from me. And he is the first person in a book, and only the second person, I've heard one other person online, who have actually come out and said what I've said, that the Roswell crash was a deliberate attempt to seed the Earth with information and technology. And just before I must go on to the other questions, but I want to finish off why. People would ask why. Humanity has been needed on this planet for a very long time. The Industrial Revolution needed people to dig holes in the ground to extract coal, to fire a furnace, to obtain ordinary earth metals, iron, lead, and then the more richer metals, like some of the materials that are used in space flight, so rare metals. And factories had to be built, the ability to transport these all over the planet, the refining of it, all of these things were done. So the heavy industry was there. But what they didn't have was the microcircuitry to take it to the next level. Let's talk literally about Star Wars. President Reagan had an energy beam weapon, so he had the physical in the early 80s, but didn't have the software to target it and maintain it until that was worked up. So in this planet, we've always had the hardware, and we've known how to use it, but we haven't had the computer stuff. So what happened at Roswell was basically the transistor was given, the very primitive microchip was given, the concept of running information by light through fiber optics rather than electrical impulses through a metal cable, all of this was given, which meant that on Earth the computer technology now could go forward on the back of the heavy industry. Now, once that was done, then the cabal or the elite then turned around and said, well, we don't need the human race anymore. And this is where this will kill off 75% of the human population comes from, because the human race are not needed to create a technology, because 150 scientists working in a bunker can outperform 100,000 people working themselves. The only reason, this is probably a bit harsh, but it's the fact, the only reason that the elite have not moved against the population, apart from the fact that it would cause a war and there are positive forces trying to prevent that, is because corporations suddenly became the government. And the corporations said, hang on a minute, we're selling toothpaste or we're selling soap powder, and we've got shareholders and we've got big offices and nice new motor cars and we've got a private jet, and we need these because these people, which the elite call the useless eaters, are actually our customers. They provide us money. So the corporations have actually fought against the highest of the elite, because they don't want 75% of their customers wiped out, because it would be the end of the corporations. And then, you know, they would all, they know they'd lose out, there'd be one world government and there would be no corporations. It would be like it would be under a Nazi condition. It would be the government owning different companies. So, oddly enough, the rise of the corporation has worked to prevent some of the mad elite from wanting to kill off 75% of the population. So, That is a very long answer to your question. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. Ree says, hi Simon, is there any correlation between the approximate Pleiadian constellation layout of the brightest lights in the Judge Kavanaugh post?
Okay, I don't get that. I think
the English and the...
Well, I think possibly what it means is that post as in a video, and I saw, it's funny isn't it, I just thought about Judge Kavanaugh, I saw day two. I wonder if the person is referring to spotlights or lights from the television that have been laid out to illuminate everything or something like that. I guess that's what it would mean. If that's what the person means, and that the lighting is sort of taking the Palladian constellation, and I'm only drawing on, you know, what I think, and I've not seen any of this, it might not be, it might be lights in the ceiling or lights behind, I don't know, but let's just go with that, let's just say that's what it is, and the possibilities here are, I mean, Judge Kavanaugh is not reptilian. Judge Kavanaugh is fifth dimensional. So remember, the Pleiades belongs to the fifth dimension. So that's a really important point. There's probably about 0.1-0.3% of reptilian in Kavanaugh. He's totally higher human, fifth dimensional. So if there are lights that have been laid out somewhere, roughly like the Pleiadian constellation, either the people organizing it are doing it, as a sort of a signal to him, or as a signal to the bad guys who are going to be watching it. So that's the only way I can give you an answer. If it's happened by chance, then it's source, because it wouldn't really be chance, it would be the creational force directing people to put lamps or lights in a certain way. They don't know what they're doing, they're just putting the lamps out. So it could be human agency, or it could be something higher up. It's fascinating, but I haven't seen the exact point you're referring to, but thank you.
Okay, thanks. Kathy says, is there anything you and people globally can do to reverse the EU bill against animal rights that recently passed?
I think the person's referring... Did you say Cathy?
Yes.
Right, I think Cathy's referring to a piece of legislation from the EU which the government of Great Britain, which is a Conservative government, sometimes referred to as a Tory government, have added amendments to. And I think this is what we're going on here about. You see, what you can do is when you're part of a European Union, you receive legislation and then you are honour bound to enact that legislation, but you're allowed to add to it. And I think that what you're referring to, as I know for a fact, that the Conservative government has added a piece of legislation saying animals don't feel pain. Now remember that the Conservative Party, and as it is at the moment, the Conservative government, is the government of hunting. You know, they're the political party that believes that, you know, it's right to go out and hunt a fox or kill badgers, whereas none of the other political parties have anything like that interest in blood and killing animals. But the Tories always have this history of the very elite riding on horses, blowing on little trumpets and going and killing animals. It's part of the political, it's their rock bed of support. And that's historically the way it's been in Britain. Now, I guess if you were a political party and you were trying to pass legislation said that animals don't feel pain, I guess your next stage is to say that, the way that they kill animals in a slaughterhouse can be eased off, or it's easier to hunt a whole range of animals. Because if you're arguing that an animal doesn't feel pain, then of course you're then absolving yourself from any pain you might inflict on an animal. If this legislation, if it was actually to be enacted, I can't do a President Trump and say there would be revolt or civil war in this country, but what would happen is it would more closely tear apart the people from the urban areas from the rural areas, because not all, but many people in the rural areas seem to say, well, you know, my grandfather hunted and, you know, we just kill off vermin and we do this and we do that, and whereas the people from the urban areas are appalled by that. And what you'd be doing is, if that law was ever enacted, you would be absolutely dividing the urban areas, which vote predominantly Labour, interesting this, isn't it, from the rural areas, which predominantly vote Conservative. So it's almost as if the Conservative Party, from a political point of view, might be saying, okay, we're going to play to our supporters in the rural areas, and we're going to stick two fingers up, or stick the finger up if you're American, to the urban areas. So I rather think this is a political move, and they're playing to their big supporters. Now, I don't know if that law would come through. I don't know if they really intend to push it through. But if they do, you'd have all the animal rights activists back up again. You know, I personally, during the time the badgers were being culled, I did donate to animal rights groups who were fighting to keep badgers alive, and I would do the same again. So I think that's what that's all about. What can we do is the question. Well, it's still a paper democracy here in Great Britain, so if you actually believe that animals do feel pain, and this is the crazy thing, because who is it that keeps a dog or a cat or a rabbit and doesn't think they feel pain? Who in the right mind would have a dog or a cat or a rabbit or a budgerigar or anything and actually believe that animal doesn't feel pain? You've got to be off your head, haven't you, or a Tory. So what I would say is, basically, it's your MP, that's how it works. You do some research, find out if this bill has got any chance of going through Parliament. It's got a process to go through. Are they really going to put it through? And if it looks like it's genuine and it looks like they're really intended to put it through, then absolutely flood your members of Parliament and saying, I won't vote for you. If you support this, I won't vote for you. And that is the only way in this country to change anything other than a revolution. Thank you.
There might also be an online petition that you could sign, because I quite often get emails.
This is a bit of a con.
Okay.
This was set up by Tony Blair. If you get 100,000 signatures to an online petition, it has to be debated in Parliament. What is actually more effective is a personal letter to your MP saying, I, Fiona Bloggs, absolutely, categorically swear that I will not vote for you at the next election if you vote for this. And what will happen is there will be websites that set up, and if that vote was ever taken, they will list the name of every member of Parliament, because it's a public document, and what he or she voted. So you could link what he or she voted, and there will be websites that will set that up. And if enough people write and say, we're not going to vote for you. Now, if you're in a marginal constituency where a Conservative has only got a 1,000 or 2,000 majority, he or she is going to have to decide whether their job is more important or whether it's pleasing the Prime Minister. And quite often they'll think their job is more important. So, yes, do both. Write on the 100,000 petition, but also specifically your name, your address, you're on the electoral register. Write in, don't mean a huge petition, they don't care about petitions, they're really, it's just a joke. But an individual letter, or go to your Member of Parliament surgery and turn up on his or her surgery and just take 5 minutes, say, I don't need your help, really, I'm here to tell you this. And be very polite and say, I will find out how you vote and I won't vote for you. And if enough people do that, when I lived in Whitby, the Scarborough Borough Council wanted, for some reason I don't know, wanted to get Tesco as a supermarket to come to Whitby. Now, Tesco's got, is an American company, and has a very poor name in Britain. A very poor name. You may be surprised to hear that, but it's got a very, very poor name. And the people of Whitby rose up against this, and there was the largest turnout in the history of Whitby. It was nearly 1,000 people turned up at the sixth form college where this planning meeting was held. And the officers of Scarborough Borough Council said, well, we recommend that the council approve Tesco's. The councillors, and I was there, so I wasn't a councillor because I wasn't on Scarborough Council at the time. I was a member of the audience. And I saw the councillors sit there, look at all the faces of the voters and said, no, we're not voting for Tesco. And Sainsbury's got it. So Sainsbury's moved in. So you really can make a change. It's a lie to say you don't have any power. People say, well, what can I do? Yeah. But if you get together and there's enough of you, you can change everything. So if you feel passionately about it, and if it's true in the sense that they want to push this bill and really push it through, that's how you can stop it. I certainly would go on a march. I'd certainly write to my Member of Parliament. I'd certainly stand on the stage and talk against it. But thank you. Let's move on.
Okay, thanks. Tom says, hello, Simon. Some members of my family have been experiencing the following for some time now, one of them being my daughter-in-law, whom I consider to be part of the family. They see out of one eye, in the case of my spouse, faces of people of all races, and that these faces float around in orbs. For the most part, these faces do not look at them, and at other times they do. Some instances, people appear to be speaking to somebody outside their vision. Okay. Do you have any insight on this?
The seeing with the one eye is actually, don't be concerned about that. You remember that the right side of the right part of your brain controls the left side of your body, the left side of your brain, the right side. And one is the very business-like, A to Z, very factual. And the other side is the more creative, that writes stories and plays and sees the beauty in a rainbow. So often we will observe something either from the left or the right side of the hemisphere of the brain, which means that only one eye appears to be spotting that. If it's an orb, in the true sense of the word, which is an energy orb, about the size of a grapefruit or an orange, that is a consciousness that's come through to this, this reality. It's a third dimensional world and is very heavy compared to fourth, fifth, etc. So let's just say there's a rather benign old gentleman in the fifth dimension who wants to have a check on somebody that he's got an eye on planet Earth. So he doesn't project his body here, he projects his mind, his consciousness here, because he wants to observe you and see how you're doing. So when he arrives, his conscious thoughts is actually forced by the heaviness of the energy into a circle. That's why planets in our universe are round. That's why when a drop of water falls, it starts to form into a droplet, a round droplet. Energy makes the energy of our dense thirdness make something round. So what you're observing is a consciousness that is like is eavesdropping on you. So it's probably benign. The colour of the orb dictates whether they're benign, positive, or a little bit negative. You can sometimes see into them, and you can see faces. And if it's talking, it may be talking to you or something else. So that's perfectly fine. It's not a problem. Don't be concerned by it. If we weren't in the third dimension, if we were in the fifth, fourth, or fifth dimension, it wouldn't appear as an orb. It would appear more of a smoky, not a jinn, but more of a smoky object, or if it's a much higher dimension, then much more of a bright light. So that's what that is. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Marlene says, "Hello, Simon. Hope you are well. I don't watch any news on the TV. It is getting more difficult to distinguish what alternate media sites are on the up and up. What are your thoughts on Ben Fulford, Kent Dunn, Are there any that you might recommend?"
Look, I think that what people need to do is to look as much as possible and see what resonates with you, what you feel is right. Look at the individual. First of all, does he or she actually look genuine? Do they come across as genuine? And then have a look at what they've said over a period of time. Do they change their tack? Do they sort of say some stuff which sounds really good and then throw something in that's like, well, I think that, half the world should be wiped out, or, corporations are good, and well, they've got a point. So look where people actually begin to show their true selves in terms of perhaps who's paying them. There are lots of people on websites now who are being paid by either individuals or organizations to run a story. I mean, look at Gaia TV. Look at the stories they've been running. Is that really a documentary? Is it really an open channel? Or is it something that is designed to make a lot of money and that's what it comes to? So look at the individuals concerned. I mean, I drive around in a car that's 12 years old. I don't have an up-to-date car. Look at people who purport to be speaking for the public and, say they're one of us, but they have the most lavish lifestyles. Check that out. Listen to the information. Ben Fulford has access to genuine information. I have no issue with that. There really is. Many, many people are really have been or are insiders. And all you've got to do is to look at it and hear it. Remember that no one person, and I include myself in this, is going to say to you 100% what you want to hear, because we're all different. What you're looking for is people who appear to be saying things that are good, but are pushing another agenda. And that's what you're looking for. So there are people who might push the agenda of paedophilia. There are a number of moves in some European countries now to try to legalize paedophilia. And we know that if Hillary Clinton had been elected, that's something that would have been accelerated. So there are a number of people who show their true colors because they begin to push certain agendas. And you as the audience will make that decision as to whether that person is speaking for you or speaking to you. and whether what they're saying actually resonates with you. And, you know, you can listen to someone and say, look, 75% of what he said makes good sense to me and 25% doesn't. But it might be that that 25% just doesn't agree with you. That doesn't mean that person's good or bad. It just means that some of the information they had might be wrong for very genuine reasons, or it just doesn't go along with what you've said. So there are lots of people like that, and I'm sure people listen to me and they think, well, yeah, I like a lot of what he says, but you know, this and this I don't agree with. Well, that's fine. That's absolutely fine, and that's what I ask you to do. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you listen to X, Y, or Z. I think you listen to as much as you can, educate yourselves, but ask your soul, is this right? Does this sound right to me? And that's the best way to go with it. It's a good, really good question. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. The next question, I've just read it, and it's a one. I'll read it out, but okay. Basically this person just needs to make a booking, so I can get in touch with them via email.
Well, just read it anyway, so that people can hear it.
Marco says, greetings, Simon. This is my second attempt, and things are very bad for me. This demonic or djinn is always inside of me and telling bad words, and every time I've got a new job, it doesn't last 2 or 3 months. Even with people that I talk to, things are getting wrong. Simon, please help me if you can. Thanks, Marco.
Well, not being funny, but if you only, this is your second attempt to get hold of me, well done you. I mean, the people who've been trying for years to get hold of me and their emails never get to me, or they get intercepted, or the internet goes down, or, you know, there is a real concerted attempt to often prevent people from talking to me, or me talking to them, one of the two. So what Beckett will do is to write to you and to make an appointment. The demons that you're referring to don't have a symbiotic relationship with ordinary people. They have a symbiotic relationship with black magicians, but they don't have that symbiotic relationship with ordinary standard people. And as a result of that, your whole life can be turned upside down. Yeah, I'll certainly have a chat with you and see what I can do to help you. Thank you for writing in.
Okay, thank you. The next question is from Christina.
Okay.
Who says, do you think articles like this are prepping the public? I've just this second copied and pasted to see what the article is.
Okay.
And it's online sort of magazine thing about the death of Queen Elizabeth will be one of the most disruptive events in Britain in the past 70 years.
I agree.
Talks about affecting the economy hugely. Talks about people being in shock and mourning because they've only experienced life, their whole life, with Queen Elizabeth as their queen.
Yep.
And so on.
Right. The special department of the government met about a month ago, first time they've ever done this, to plan for the death of the Queen. That is the Elizabeth II. Remember, Queen Elizabeth was Queen Victoria, and before that she was Elizabeth I. So she's had quite a good innings as a monarch. She's got a taste for it. So what they decided was there would be a number of days of mourning. And the days of Queen Victoria, you went round with a black armband. I don't think that will be required, but there will be maybe as 3, 4, or 5 days off work. Possibly 3, 4, or 5 days off work officially. Isn't that wonderful? So that will affect the economy. But think of the T-shirts that they'll sell. Think of the cups and the little thimbles and the knickknacks and the coins and the medals. So, yes, the production of the country will go down in one way. But the merchandising opportunities are phenomenal, and I think they're already, the corporations are already working on, and they've already, I have to tell you that, though this isn't public knowledge, they are ready to make a film on the life of Queen Elizabeth, and they are doing that. That you, even if you're in Hollywood, and any of you in Hollywood who are listening to me now, you won't even know about that, but they're working on that, because that's a big money spinner. The Americans and the Brits will love it. But what we have is a situation where people have only known Queen Elizabeth II, and she was in office in, what, 52, 1952, something like that, 52, 53. So she is the longest reigning monarch, and this country, Great Britain, has changed dramatically, but she has been a focal point and has remained without change in terms of the office that she holds. I don't believe there'll be a collapse. I think there'll be a lot of older generation people who will be deeply moved and deeply upset, and they'll be weeping and wailing. The younger generation will say, so what? There are lots of people now who believe in a republic. And I was just reading to Rebecca only the other day, I talked about Gerry Anderson's, who made the famous Thunderbirds, and they made something called Captain Scarlet. And Captain Scarlet was one of the programs that my mother, God bless her, used to insist I was made to watch. And reading the words that went for the TV production, I think it was set in about, supposed to be 2060 AD, and in it, it sets Britain as a republic. That was really interesting. Captain Scarlet was made in 1968, I think, 67 or 68. In actual fact, the very first Captain Scarlet, if I remember rightly, and I will, was shown on a Thursday or a Friday, I think it was a Friday, and on about 5:30 on a Friday afternoon, and at 9 o'clock that Friday was the very first Patrick McGoohan prisoner. So it's all deliberate that they ran a Captain Scarlet, which I was made to watch, and then at 9 o'clock there was The Prisoner, which I was made to watch. But in the Captain Scarlet, because we're going off track now, but in the Captain Scarlet, it definitely has Britain as a republic. So right back in 68, the Andersons, who really did have a lot of knowledge, they really were up there with the highest and the high, were already secretly or semi-secretly through television beginning to seed the idea that we'd be a republic, and I'm sure we will. There isn't a place for a monarchy anymore. It's really very difficult. Once the Queen goes, there aren't going to be many people who are going to want the job. So it's a really good question. No, not doom and gloom. There will be a hit to the economy to start with, but there'll be so many watches with the face of Queen Elizabeth or little plates that you can put up on the wall that they'll soon make the money back. Okay. Can I just do my thank you to everyone, Rebecca? Is that all right now? Would you mind? All right. I want to thank everyone who's been so kind to keep the show on the road. That's really what you do. You keep the show on the road. Keep me here. Keep me doing it. Somebody gave me a really, really kind donation, and that was great because the back of my 12-year-old car, the light, the indicator reversing light, that all got smashed, and I'm going to have to replace that, because it's up due for a service, and if I don't have a car, I can't get around the country, so I need to get around. So every penny really helps, and I'm incredibly grateful. So thank you to Susan, to Nick, to Terry, let's get my list, for Adelia, Oliver, Vesna, Jacqueline, Sheena, Stefano, Elaine, Julia, Campbell, Rudolph, Stefan, Richie, Robert, John, Sarah, Patap, Eric, Paul, Robert, Larissa, Hans. Thank you, Hans. That was helpful. That'll pay for the car servicing. Ralph, John, Helen, Amy, Sandra, I think it's Sasha, Marvin, Alfredo, Donnie, Charlotte, Beatrice, Robin, Shari. That's the first time I've ever not been able to read my own writing. Algenandra, I think. Charlie, Charlene, Angela, Martin, Dursit, Esther, I nearly finished, and finally Kirsten. So if I've missed any of you out, I'm really, really sorry. I do apologise, it's not deliberate. And those of everybody who's helped to keep this road going and the show on it, thank you. Okay, let's go on with a few more questions.
Okay, Vanessa says, I live in Vancouver. Are there any earthquakes coming in 2018 or 2019 to be concerned about?
No, I've got no intel on that. If you think back to my posts, I was very concerned for possible quakes in some of the national parks in America, and I did actually say I was worried up to sort of July, August. I think it's Yellowstone that is continually, the recording devices are picking up small to medium earth tremors quite deep down. Many of them are natural, but what tends to happen is there's a small crazy group of people who have some rather interesting technology that can exacerbate or develop what's already there. It's not widely understood. It's very hard to use a device from zero. You've got to hook on something. So let's say I want to make it rain in California. Wouldn't that be lovely? I can't just, with the technology that's available, go to a blank piece of sky and create a cloud and direct it and make it rain. That's not how the technology works, really. What they do is they go for where there are already clouds or where there is already a high level or higher level of moisture, and then seed that or activate that and then push that towards the target. So it's literally like, it's that's how it works. Okay? Right, okay, and what's the next question then?
Michael says, I've heard you mention a couple of times that when we die, we should not go to the light, as is customarily taught or discussed. I haven't heard you elaborate on this, however. Why should we not? And where should we focus our thoughts and energy when we cross over? This seems so important. Thank you in advance.
Okay, thank you for that. I think what's happened here is you probably missed a couple of either interviews or radio shows where I did elaborate and I did go into quite some detail. And in fact, at a couple of conferences, I've also done presentations on it. So I guess what's happened is you've heard me on the radio shows, on the podcasts, talk about it. But to you, there was no backup because I've already given that. But I won't say to you, listen, go find it for yourself. I'll quickly just say to you that the light is a trap, and it was a trap that was put in a very, very long time ago. We talked literally about Ariel and in 1947, the alien female, how she had to escape the trap. The grid was placed around the Earth to prevent humanity from developing. Think of a individual in history, he or she, who has had a profound positive effect on the Earth. If that person lived to 70, 80, 90, 100 years old, and then when they physically died, if there was no trap, they would reincarnate back on the earth, and at the age of 3, 4, or 5, they would start to carry on their experiments or their writings or their music, whatever it was, from where they left off. So within 3 or 4 generations of this one individual incarnating on the planet, their specialism would actually have changed the Earth. So if everybody were able to come back without the mind wipe, in other words, you arrive here and you remember what you did before, we would overthrow the cabal, we would overthrow the reptilian overlords, we would challenge artificial intelligence, we would have a really clear understanding of who we were and our relationship to the planet and to Source, and job done. And so by keeping us prisoners of our minds, only very few of us have the capability to remember some past lives. Some people say I'm reincarnated from Tesla, or some people say I'm reincarnated from Napoleon, or somebody may say this, somebody may say that, and they may well be. They may well be. But the problem is that unless it was universal, then you can't build up that great pressure of consciousness. And that's what we need, is this rising of consciousness. So the trap was designed to prevent humanity understanding who it was. And as long as people don't know who they are, they can't challenge the puppet masters. And what's happening at the moment is that people are beginning to understand who they are. Not everybody, but a sizable proportion. And a smaller group within that really are taking charge of their lives. So we are doing it. But this fundamental trap was placed a long time ago by a very small, technologically powerful, but spiritually poor group of off-planet entities that wished to maintain the Earth as you would a fish in a fish bowl or a fish tank. So this is our zoo. and, you know, this isn't any good. So that's what it's all about. Okay, thank you. Next one.
Thank you very much. Okay. Jade says, hello, Simon. I suspect that my son is an indigo child due to him being more interested in what some may call unconventional things for his age. He's currently 9. My question is, how do I empower him to bypass any peer pressure or brainwashing and stay strong and remain true to himself and follow his higher power or instincts? Also, I feel he follows his own convictions. There are influences from unaware and unawake people who have tried in the past to make him question himself and try to encourage him to conform to their way of thinking. I always ask him to follow his instincts, but I'm just one person and I don't have as much support as I would have hoped for.
Okay. Right. I just had a cat here. We'll say hello. Let's have a quick hello. That's Ragnarok, which is already a star, and he's becoming quite clever at knowing when the radio show's on. And what he does is he sits behind me, between me and the chair, waiting for his moment of stardom. So there he is. It's 4.5 months old, 4 months old.
Yeah.
So there he is. So we'll just put you back there. You've got your stardom thing. Yeah, you can have that. Yeah. It's a really good question. Often a parent will feel terribly alone because he or she feels that it's them against the system. Your view must be, I don't care. I believe in what is right, and I will do everything I can to maintain that. What you have to do is to be clever, because the law is designed to turn out children that don't question, or their questions are not aimed at the controlling force. Their questions are aimed at something that doesn't have any material effect at all. So we could argue about what Pitt the Younger did, or what this, that, and this, that, but it doesn't actually challenge or question what we do today. So there are lots of areas about inoculations, about the way that we're taught at school. My advice is this. At the moment, we are in a controlled 3D environment. You want your child or your children to do well. So I give you the analogy of the circus. Now, I'm of an age where I remember going to circuses when I was very little. And those of you who don't remember might have seen TV shows or film shows where the clown stands there with a hoop, which is doused in petrol, and they light the burning hoop, and then the show dog jumps through the hoop. Why does a dog jump through the hoop? Does it like singeing its tail and its face? No, it doesn't. It does it because it's learnt that if it doesn't jump through the hoop, it's not going to get any food that evening. That's what we have on this planet. If we don't go to university, and if we don't answer the questions in the way that we're expected to answer, we won't get that qualification. If we don't get that qualification, then we'll be working in some sort of store, perhaps forever, just doing nothing, really, for a long time. So I always say to parents, teach your children the answers that they are required to have when they go to school. But teach them the truth. And say to them, in the four walls of this house, this is the reality. This is the truth. This is what we believe in. This is really what it's about. When you go out of this door, when you meet people that you don't know, or you're in the education system, or your employment, you conform to the rules. You give them what they want to hear. Because we can't say to a child, UFOs are real, without that prerequisite. Because if we don't, then that child goes out and starts saying, UFOs are real. And then the teacher says, no, they're not. And there's a big argument. And then the school comes to the parent and says, why are you filling your child with all of these nonsense? And then you get social services coming and saying, you're not a fit mother. We can't have you bringing up children like this. Don't think I'm joking, because that really does happen. It really happens. There'll be many of you who have heard stories of this. Maybe even it's happened to you. So my advice is, you run a dual track. you say this is the way it is, this is not. I'm going to give you an example. There's one young girl who, when David Icke turned up at her parents' house, and this young girl was, I don't know, 11 or 12, maybe she was as young as 7, she said to David Icke, "Do you believe in UFOs?" The very first thing when she opened the door. But that young woman had already learnt that it was perfectly fine within that house. And if somebody came to the house that was expected, then that was all right. But outside of that, you had to be careful what you said. When you are in a relationship with a man or a woman and that partner does not believe in what you want, then you have that issue, because you want to bring your child up in a set way, but the other one doesn't. You've got the adverts, the cinema, the music, the child's peer group, friends, all putting the pressure on. How do you actually maintain that individual and keep them close to the reality and not lose them to the world of corporations? You know, how crazy is it that, you know, we can still go to some big department stores even today in 2018 and it's pink for a girl and blue for a boy? Why? Because manufacturers can do that, because they can then target girly presents and boy presents. And it's all about making money. It's about stereotyping. So in the parents' mind, I went to a shop that sold pet food very recently, and on the cat food there was this flavour and that flavour, and all of them were like human-y flavours. And I'm thinking, the cat actually doesn't mean anything, because the cat doesn't read the packaging. And let's remember that. They don't go into the pet shop with a cat under the arm and I say to the cat, "Do you like that packaging? Do you like that?" No. So it's aimed at me, aimed at the person. And I think, oh yes, I like asparagus. Or, yes, I really like that. So my cat will like that. And this is the problem we've got. We've got a system that is looking at children and saying, this child is the consumer of tomorrow. And so we want to mould this person, not what the parents want, but to the system. You know, and a lot of parents buy things for their children, believing that they are being good parents and they're providing the best. But what they're actually doing is actually pushing a child in a particular road without really understanding it. I have a friend a number of years ago now who bought his 5 or 6 or 7 year old child an incredibly expensive like a toy, but it was a big tractor, battery operated. You could go in and you could drive, and it would do something like 3 or 4 miles an hour. And it was a hell of a big thing, and it took a week to get it out of the house. Then you had to find a place that was safe for it to drive on. And that kid was actually just quite happy playing with a cardboard box. So what I'm saying is that we as parents need to look and say, are we buying things because that's what we want? Or are we buying something that will develop that child's spirituality? Will it keep them connected to what we believe in, or will it take them away from that? This is a topic that I would talk individually with parents on, because everyone's different. So yeah, I fully understand, fully support, and you know what? The battle that you're facing is up and down the planet at the moment. And when one day, fingers crossed, to get the funding in and to get the money in and start doing all the things I want to do with the healing center, etc., support group for parents who want a spiritual path for their children. You know, so we'll get experts in how to homeschool your child. We'll get experts in how to fight forced vaccinations. We'll get experts into how to combat the commercialization, the pressure to buy this type of training shoe, running shoe, and this, that, and the other, and to understand that to have a great time, we don't have to go to a theme park. We could actually go out to a forest in autumn and look at the beautiful colours of the leaves, for goodness sake. That's one of the things I'd love to do, is to actually, you need money on this planet, you need money to create support groups for parents who are struggling to maintain a semblance of a love in a very difficult world. Thank you. We'll do a few more questions if we may.
Okay, probably just one more, because you've got Ted Marr radio.
Oh, good.
Show,
well, so I've got Ted Marr soon after this, so I'll just make this the last one. Okay, fine, thank you.
So Carol says, "Dear Simon, thank you very much for all your work to free the human spirit. I'm listening to you for almost 2 years now. On a recent trip to Morocco, I felt in my eyes that some of the women there really look like men. Is this a feature of the Babylonian connection of the past, or what is the issue with these weird looks? Thank you very much. Love and light, Carol."
More than one answer. You could go to any place on the planet and think that a woman looked like a man or a man looked like a woman, and in itself it doesn't actually matter, does it really? But what you're saying is that you felt that there was a predominance here. Let's look at the 3D aspect. If you're in a harsh environment, bitter cold, Eskimos, searing heat, the westernized nice pink complexion doesn't hold up because you're assaulted by the salt from the sea or the hot sun and the sand windstorms or the bitter ice. And first of all, on a physical aspect, it will change your face and your soul becomes more resilient. I don't mean hard, becomes more resilient to keep the body going in a challenging environment. So there are very genuine 3D reasons why genetically a race may look not as from a European standpoint or a white standpoint. Now, there are other reasons, of course, where predominantly in an area a number of male souls will incarnate into a female body. Happens the other way around, of course, but there is a possibility that you're seeing a group of in an area female sexed bodies containing a male sex soul, and that then can give that. But without more specifics and without more insight, I can't really give you an explanation for that beyond what I've told you. But yes, you know, it becomes quite apparent that in some areas the pattern is not following what we would expect. So listen, I want to thank everyone so very much for listening, and thank you for, you know, keeping the faith, as it were, in really important times. We've had our summer holidays. I think we're now seeing things going to speed up a little bit. So I'm going to take a few minutes break and I'm going to go on and do the Ted Marr Show, which is of course live. This will be recorded now and will go out on the Sunday. Thank you so much. And look forward to seeing you. So thank you to Rebecca, who so wonderfully asks the questions for me. Thank you for Andy, who maintains the website. And just finally, on Sunday, of course, we have the big Connecting Consciousness meeting. I'm expecting 100 of you from all over the United Kingdom to turn up. It's not a conference in the true sense of the word. It is to talk about the organization, to take us to the next level. Really looking forward to seeing you all there. So thank you very much indeed. God bless. Bye-bye.